I might get Oscar Weekly.
It's MMO Weekly.
You know that intro sound? Welcome back, my friends. The show that comes to you once a week on your Mondays, brightening up your commute to or from work. This is MMO Weekly, Mike and Oscar Weekly, hashtag MMOW, hashtag MMO Weekly. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
I'm also Mike. It was a big night for Roma.
It was.
Which is in Mexico City, now that we know.
Sure.
You reviewed that film.
Yeah, and also I got taken to school by you, yes. This is what we're doing. This is what we're watching. And this is kind of where we are right now. We are on the heels. Like last week, we gave you MMO Weekly was a review of the Golden Globes Award. This week, MMO Weekly, we are now recording. It is 10:12 p.m. at night on the East Coast, late Sunday night. And we are just off the heels of the Critics' Choice Awards.
We just watched 3 hours of the CW, folks.
Yeah.
I feel like a tween again.
Are we the first 30-year-old men to do that? Possibly. Possibly.
And
very
whoever's
possible.
Listening. Yeah. With us. So we're all feeling a little awkward right now. We watched too many trailers for, what was that show about the aliens?
Roswell, yeah.
Roswell and the vampires.
We were more present than half the nominees. As none of them decided to show up.
And our jokes will bomb equally
oh
as well.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, we're going to get into all of that. Let's start where Mike started off, though. We'll talk about the Best Picture winner. The big winner of the night was Roma. That's the last award given out. It won Best Film here. What does that tell us?
It tells us that Vegas is usually right about things, and Vegas is saying they're
don't I know it
Best Picture favorite. A lot of people were talking about the Yorgos film, the favorite. They
sure.
were talking about A Star Is Born perhaps winning it. Green Book had won a bunch of audiences awards. It did not do all that well with the critics, Mike. Roma seemed like a solid pick. In my opinion, it's a worthy film of Best Picture honors. We're going to have a segment at the end of the show kind of breaking down the Best Picture category further. But what did you think about the overall sweep of things tonight?
I'm happy for Roma. We both predicted it would do well, and we both predicted it would win Best Picture at the end of the night. That came to fruition, and I think it's more a course correction after what the HFPA did with the Golden Globes last week and throwing us all into a tizzy.
But we figured the critics would go for this
sure.
movie.
Yeah, and Roma's been leading in the clubhouse through all the precursors, the Critics Circles Awards, all the Best Pictures, so it makes sense that this was kind of an easy pick, I feel, and it makes the most sense. It's very logical, but you're right. Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, Mary Poppins, et cetera, all get shut out. Black Panther on that list too. They all needed big wins, but Black Panther won the undercard, no major awards. Mm-hmm. But I would argue you could say it got shut out of the major awards, just like the list you gave got shut out of every award on the night.
Yes.
I would also say two injured pictures. I don't want to call them losers, but two right. injured pictures coming out of the night. A Star Is Born, I think, is worse off now than it was 3 days ago, 2 days ago.
If it was going to have a great chance at the Oscars or become a front runner again,
yeah.
it needed to win tonight. Like, can it still be a contender?
Look, it's big for Lady Gaga to win, right? If we're talking about individual awards from that mm-hmm. movie, Lady Gaga winning here is huge. And tying with Glenn Close is huge. But you can't take Bradley Cooper seriously as a director nominee anymore, or at least in terms of wanting to win, hopefully to win.
It's Cuarón's category.
Absolutely, Cuarón's category. You can't really take the picture seriously anymore in terms of Best Picture.
Well, we're going to have a theory at the end of the yep. show. We're going to save it. That's another tease. Mike's trying to go over the teaser threshold for you. But
and the last one yeah. there, Sam Elliott too, but Bradley Cooper, those two actors are right. kind of, you can't really take them seriously in their categories anymore.
You predicted this a long time ago. I'm surprised you're not more insufferable.
No, Bradley Cooper has been my wire-to-wire number one, so my pride is hurt in that respect, and that he's never really been taken, given the consideration, even though he's won a lot of Critics Circles Awards again. But to me, those are the major stories that Roma's win, and Roma's the many wins that it had tonight,
yeah.
is kind of the picture that it's painting, or the story that it's writing, leaving all these...
The mural that it's painting?
These puzzle, possibly,
the puzzle
coming
that
into
it's
place.
Puzzling?
Yes. But we're going to go through it. That'll be, like Mike said, we're going to break down the hierarchy of the Best Picture candidate to kind of put our own puzzle pieces out there and tell you what we're reading the tea leaves.
We'll sprint through it, perhaps.
We like doing analogies, allegories, and similes without really spitting facts. So that's what we're going to do at the end of this episode. But let's start at the top like we do for every MMO Weekly. And even though it's a Critics' Choice review, it doesn't mean that we haven't been watching stuff. So, Mike, what are we watching lately?
We're watching the CW.
Yeah, we are, baby.
We're watching Taye Diggs host the Critics' Choice Awards. Michael, how'd you think he did tonight?
Give me your top five favorite episodes of Roswell in order.
Now it's called Roswell, New Mexico?
I don't know.
It's like it's got a subtitle. I just laughed really hard the first time I watched that trailer.
Some of that dialogue, yeah.
Because the dude's reaction shots, too, just bad. Yeah. It was just like smell the fart acting to
not
the
great.
Perfection.
Well, everybody's got to start somewhere. Anyway, though, so I guess, yeah. I thought Taye Diggs was okay, right? Yep. He was probably better than we thought he was going to do.
The problem is, like, there's like an hour and a half in the middle of the show where Chuck Lorre's many actors and actresses, all of his cast members, are just droning on his vanity thoughts. And I just like 20 minutes of my life I cannot get back.
The pacing of this was excruciating, the show overall. I thought Taye Diggs was okay, pretty respectable, but my God, was this show slow.
Fix act twos of award shows, guys.
Please.
That has to be done. Like, nobody's done it, Mike.
And part of that, at least for me tonight, was that, okay, Taye Diggs had an opening number celebrating black film and diversity in film.
So he can't sing. He really kind of can't
dance. He punted on the sing altogether, which I appreciate.
He did the William Shatner spoken word thing.
Which is fine.
And it was funny. And the backup singers, who really can sing.
Right.
And the dancers, who really can dance. And he kind of went along with it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was fun. It was funny. It was fun. It was a good opening number. And then in that act two lull, we had like an hour and 15 minutes where he wasn't on the screen at all.
Right.
Kicking off segments, interacting with the audience, and then he would just went away, and we were left with just these long, drawn out, like, just not good, not entertaining segments.
Yeah, he had an early joke in the opening. Nativ is not a word, it's native. I mean, he went with it.
He flubbed himself and made a joke out of it.
He
that
had
was
the
good.
Mary Poppins outfit. I just thought he did a nice
Black
job.
Black Klansman outfit, John David Washington outfit. Yeah.
The photo bombing or the camera bombing of the Joey's Burger guy.
That guy.
Taye Diggs.
Yeah, if that's not a meme by the time this episode is posted, the internet is not doing its job right.
He always brought a smirk or a smile, and he's not a comedian, but his stuff worked tonight. The last, I would say, 10 presentations were excruciating.
They were like dry toast.
They were bombing.
The jokes.
Bombing.
The wannabe jokes. I don't even know how you describe them.
I felt bad for them. Like,
no
Olivia
one
Munn
was better. Well, I was going to say Willem Dafoe. Like, no one was better. Willem Dafoe said a one-liner, and then he like made that face like, like, it's what everybody
bombing.
Was doing.
Yeah, Olivia Munn is usually funny.
Yes.
And Awkwafina is always funny, and she had the worst joke of the night. And
now,
how do you make Awkwafina unfunny? Ask the writers for the Critics' Choice Awards.
It could be a couple of things here. It could be that nobody in the room was paying attention anytime anyone was speaking. That happened with Taye Diggs. He had to yell at people to sit down.
Yeah, so how about that? Basically, they can mingle for like 90 seconds. Get up and mingle. Sit down. What is that? I guess that's every award show. We would know.
Now, Louis C.K., again, I'm not bringing him up for any good, you know, to talk about his situation right now, but he was on record previously at a different Critics' Choice Award where the mingling was basically how he got his internet show that Chucky and Pete or whatever and Pete.
In a 90-second pitch. Huh?
Yeah, he went up to Edie Falco. Horace and Pete, sorry, thank you. He went up to all these different people and pitched them the idea right there. So there is work being done by these actors and actresses and studio people there, but I think that may have had a part in the jokes bombing that nobody was really listening to anyone with the microphone because everyone was in a mad rush back to their seats. I don't know if there was alcohol served. They didn't make a joke about it.
We were almost upside down on our couches, just absurdly
bad.
Like awkward and
bad comedy.
Cringing. And
cringy comedy, yeah, for
not
sure.
Not working. It was a bomb fest with the comedy. So some other highlights, I guess we'd say, and lowlights. I mean, the Chuck Lorre presentation took forever. That's 20 minutes. Like I said, we can't.
And how
back.
About the touchdown of it all, the ending play? Chuck Lorre basically saying this award show is meaningless. This is the equivalent of getting a participation trophy or an A for effort in second grade. Thanks, Chuck. Here's your Lifetime Achievement Award, buddy.
60-year boss of writers. You
Good
can't write
Lord.
It. Yeah, I mean, Claire Foy said she can't get the time. Like, she studied acceptance speeches back. Chuck Lorre said the Creative Achievement Award is like getting an A for effort in second grade. Christian Bale was surprised his movie was considered a comedy. And they all are throwing shade at the critics. Like, backhanded compliments galore tonight.
And then half the nominees don't even bother showing up.
Yeah, we had no-shows. Bill Hader, the cast of The Favorite, Matthew Rhys, Olivia Colman won a...
half of the Best Actress nominees. Oh, they kept panning to the overall
Toni
shot.
Collette wasn't there.
It was really weird. A really weird vibe this year compared to last.
The clips they showed for some of these movies.
My God.
Pretty funny.
So Hereditary is one of the nominees for Best Sci-Fi Horror Movie, right?
The Alex Wolff clip.
Even the makers of Hereditary don't highlight Toni Collette's performance in this.
Which is mind-boggling.
But instead of showing, you don't go to show Toni Collette's, maybe you show the click, maybe you show the car ride, there's a lot of other scenes. No, we're going to submit the scene where Alex Wolff is slamming his head into the desk, leaving a pile of blood and screaming.
In terror.
Oh my gosh.
Screaming in terror. We laughed so hard because we figured it was going to cut to something else.
Right.
And you're going to see Toni Collette looking mysterious, giving us a reason to watch that movie now on Amazon.
So awkward.
Does the CW have something against Amazon? They might be something like, we're going to show the most awkward clip from all of these streaming service shows because TV, damn it, TV. Because that was just a straight up, let's show the reaction shot from one of the most horrifying scenes that we could show on TV.
So I would put this award show in the history of this podcast. We started last year, right before award season. We watched the Critics' Choice, Golden Globes, BAFTAs, Oscars, Grammys even. You could throw in there MTV Movie Awards, MTV Video. I would put this one, by far, for me anyway, in terms of entertainment value, this was the bottom of the barrel.
The
right
worst.
Now. Yeah,
the worst
by
one.
Far.
Then at the end of the night, they thank all the critics, and they show one guy, briefly. None of the critics get camera.
So
I mean,
awkward.
I guess we're not camera ready. I get that. We have a podcast. Most of us have podcasts, so I get it. We're faces for radio, and
I hate being this negative too.
Word.
And it's a shame because Taye Diggs was so surprisingly decent. I would have him be fine with him being a host of anything else.
I thought he did a nice job, but he's only on screen for what, 15 minutes?
And he probably will face the brunt of this and that, just this mess that this award show was. He might be scapegoated for it, and it's really unfair, and it's a shame because I thought he was really good.
Yeah, he was good. The writers. Not so much.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Sorry.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, that's what we watched for the last 3 hours plus. So
giant fart noise.
Let's slide in now. Talk about some of the results of some of these categories. We're going to hit on the news of the week right here. News. News of the week, we talk about the top news stories of the week, and in these types of MMOWs that are review shows, we're going to talk about the biggest stories coming out of these award shows. Now, obviously, last week, the Golden Globes, the big news of the week kind of wrote itself at the end there.
Yes.
We didn't have that big of a shock here, so let's start on a somber note personally for the likes of Also Mike, myself, Matt Negley at Next Best Picture, all these individual campaigns that have tried to get Toni Collette, against all odds, nominated for the Oscars nonetheless. I think the nail has been driven into the coffin.
This was the Hail Mary. She needed to win tonight.
Yes.
And she didn't even show up tonight, Michael. She knew.
She didn't even get featured in the best sci-fi or horror category.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
And she did not get seen enough this year, perhaps. That movie did not get seen enough, perhaps. Quiet Place won Best Sci-Fi or Comedy, the Best Picture.
I've seen a lot of people on Twitter and film Twitter saying that the Academy and the critics just aren't ready to embrace horror, and maybe that's the issue. I would have thought after
hardcore horror.
Sure. And I would have thought after last year that Get Out was kind of a changing moment, a revolutionary moment. It's seeming more just like an outlier than it is a time for change or a pendulum.
Get Out's a mixture.
Right.
It's a genre bender.
Sure.
It's as funny and as well produced, and there's a lot going on there. So it's not a hardcore horror flick like Hereditary.
No, that's true.
And Hereditary is almost like a new school horror flick where Rosemary's Baby innovated back in the day with this subtle horror and the horror that you'll stay awake at night for the next...
sure will.
For the next years of your life.
Right.
That's the kind of horror Hereditary has.
Yep.
We broke it down into a two-part OSP. Go watch that on Amazon. Go listen to our pods there. I mean, I think it's an all-timer of a performance that we're going to look back on and just think, what a shame.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really do think it's been my wire-to-wire number one performance. I don't think there's anything this year on the level of it, save for Glenn Close's performance. I don't think Lady Gaga's on the level of it, but let's, I guess, transition there next. Who did end up winning Best Actress tonight? A big surprise.
It's a tie.
It was a tie. It was both Glenn Close and Lady Gaga. If you go on our Twitter at MM and Oscar, you'll see my reaction shots for when those winners were announced. I put up my little selfies and you can guess which which reaction was for which winner. But if you listen, you'll know. Mike.
So Glenn Close did not invite Gaga up immediately. She did not demand that we get, you know, the next winner up and do the arm around
each other,
Amy Adams thing.
Honestly, good for her. Like, this is Glenn Close's time.
Glenn Close gets it, because that was very awkward, the Amy Adams thing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
it was.
We were just, I mean, look, we were, like, in suspense of that whole thing working out, because Amy Adams was, like, going on and on, and then we're like, is she going to give Patricia Arquette time to speak? Like, she invited her up here, and then she's doing most of the talking, and Patricia Arquette was not amused by this. She wanted her own time. She's like, well, I got to share this up here. I got things to say. You got things to say. How the hell are we going to do that? Once they started talking together, they're like,
It was very awkward. Awkward was kind of the theme of the night for the show overall.
And Glenn Close didn't do that, though.
No, Glenn Close took her time. She was very gracious and accepting of her speech. I thought it was a cool moment when she left. By the time Willem Dafoe was ready to announce the second winner, all the crowd was yelling at her to stay. Stay up there. We want more Glenn. And so she came back out and was there as Lady Gaga's name got announced.
She had a classy transition too, because, like, you would think, like, on the spot, I thought Glenn Close was just going to say something of the usual rhetoric, just like saying, oh, it's a tie because all of my nominees are wonderful, and except for the ones that didn't win, but the two of us that won are better, slightly better. No, I thought she was going to say something.
Which would have been awesome.
And stumble over her words a little bit, but no, she actually made it sound classy, like we celebrate each other.
And right.
I thought she nailed that transition.
And to Amy Adams' credit, not that we're going to talk about TV awards, but the two ties were both in lead actress categories, and both of them kind of had that message. I want to stand up here with the other girl. Oh, I'm sorry, the other women. I want to stand up here with the other woman, making that point to emphasize women. Glenn Close having a similar message about inclusion and being acceptance, and really a rah-rah moment for the gender at large, and I think that's awesome.
Gaga's trying to bring her over, and Glenn Close is like, no, you have your moment too. So again, Glenn Close saving that presentation just right from the beginning and then throughout Gaga's speech. Because Gaga comes up there. She's a bit of a mess early on. Now,
we're
not acceptance speech critics. That's not our job here. But we realize that part of your campaigning to the Academy is how well you do throughout all these precursors with your speeches. Like, Glenn Close knocked it out of the park last week. Do we have a narrative that Glenn Close winning an Oscar is something awesome, is something celebratory for the year, right? We do now.
Yeah.
Because she's gone up there and essentially campaigned for herself by delivering two awesome speeches, one after another. Now Gaga gets up there. She's a bit of a mess. And then she nails it, Mike. I thought she did a great job. Thanking life, I thought that was going to be too deep. And then she actually explains it. Like, she's lived a hell of a life. I mean, think
she
about
has,
what
she has, and
Gaga's
definitely
done.
Had some high highs and some certainly low lows. And she's been on public record, to her credit, in trying to help others about those. And this was like her moment to reflect on all that.
Dedicates the award to those affected by alcoholism and addiction. And she has some poignant things to say on that. I thought she did a terrific job. I don't know if these two are going to wind up duking it out for that Oscar, if Olivia Colman's going to have something to say yet, like from SAGs or whatnot. It's going to be fascinating to look at this race, because this may become more of a race. I don't think Glenn Close tying at the critics cements her as the front runner yet. I'm going to say their contender status.
Here's a stat for you. The last four times an actress has won the Best Actress Award in both the Critics' Choice and a Globe, either comedy or drama, doesn't matter. The last four times it's happened, they've won the Oscar for Best Actress as well. So I think Close is in the driver's seat. I am surprised. I think Colman.
So you do think she's a front runner right now?
If
you had to bet, you would bet.
Yes. If I had to, or when I do. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think the biggest story
for some good ads.
I think the biggest story from this category at large, though, was, I think when you hear a tie happened, and you think, okay, it's going to be the two Golden Globe winners, and Colman's not the other tie.
True.
I think that's a big deal, especially when it comes to the critics' circles.
I wonder
who are part of the Academy.
True. I wonder if the Best Actress in a Comedy award kind of put her on the back burner for the critics. Because, all right, we already gave
her
that
love type thing. Yeah,
but then again, Best Actor category,
sure, that was
they gave them both. to Christian Bale.
They did give him both. Christian Bale becomes one of the few people, I think it was Next Best Picture who had the stat. I didn't go and look it up before we hit record, but not many times, maybe only once previously, has an actor or actress gotten two Critics' Choice Awards on the same night for the same performance. And Bale now joins that illustrious list. And I know you had a problem with the movie at large. I think the performance, if you could take it in a vacuum, I think it's awards worthy. I do. I've come around on it.
I think this is the news of the night because I think the best actor race is starting to crystallize.
Yes, I would agree.
I was wondering if we were going to have three or four contenders, if a lot of actors were going to win various award shows. Now that Christian Bale won last week, won again this week, seems like he is the front runner, or at least he's a major contender. Like, if Viggo won tonight or if Rami won again tonight, you know, it would have been a different story, because I do think Christian Bale, if he won comedy again and Rami won this one, all right, we still got that, you
know. Two bulls fighting, yeah, what a butting heads
but
there.
Now we have a front runner.
I definitely came around as well to your idea that every time the camera panned to Viggo, he should have been eating some kind of big Italian dinner.
He is missing.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah, he is missing his opportunity.
Like, at one time, he's getting shaved Parmesan on top of something, goes back, he's got
character.
A bib on, and he's eating a big plate of spaghetti. That would have been funny.
He should have stayed that character.
Eight of the last 10 times that a Critics' Choice winner has also won one of the Golden Globes for the Best Actor category, they've gone on to win the Oscar. That's, again, eight of the last 10 times this has happened. The lone exceptions were Clooney in 2011-2012 for The Descendants. He ended up losing to Jean Desjardins for The Artist. And Michael Keaton in 2014-15 for Birdman. Ended up losing to Eddie Redmayne at the Oscars for The Theory of Everything.
So it has happened recently where
sure. An
actor's won a couple early precursors and lost down the stretch. But I do think this movie, if there's any movie that could have a backlash, this movie can. I just rewatched it again the other night, and
definitely not immune. And political movies, all you have to do is go back and look at Zero Dark Thirty, right, or The Big Short, which is quasi-political. Political movies certainly are polarizing. I don't think with the Academy, I don't think they want to be that on the nose with their messages.
I just don't think this movie is that good. I don't think it's that well made.
But you feel that way about the performance itself?
I think the performance is strong. I think the mimicry's there. I don't think there's a ton of range. You know, this is not an every year best actor winner. Like, or most years best actor winner. I think he's a chameleon. I think he's doing the method acting thing to almost dangerous levels. I think the fact that he just gains the weight, and when Gary Oldman just put on the suit, I think is something to be said, you know? And then he basically does a Gary Oldman impression at these last two award shows, dressing up exactly like Gary Oldman looked at last year's award show. All he needs is the sunglasses now on stage.
Oh, he just takes off the Christian Bale mask and it is Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman.
You are the greatest actor of all time.
Yeah, he would be.
Going to be interesting to see the BAFTA fallout as well. I think if Bale wins it there, it's going to be tough to predict against him come Oscars time.
True.
So that's what we have as far as the major awards. And the fallout from the Critics' Choice. We'll move on here to the Undercard Awards, as we've been calling them in our process here, and we'll talk about if we care about them in a segment, oddly enough, ironically titled, Do You Care? That beautiful voice box touched by an angel.
It's Lady Gaga,
himself.
Right?
Yes, exactly. That's Lady Gaga giving our intro to the Do You Care section. This is the part of the show where Mike and I take news stories of the weeks and ask ourselves, do we, should we, or will we care about them? And since it's this Critics' Choice Rewind edition of Mike, and Oscar Weekly, let's talk about some undercard awards, Michael.
Yeah, best song went to Shallow.
Yeah.
No surprise there.
Well, this is over. This category was over as soon as A Star Is Born came out.
Yeah.
I actually posted on Twitter, I think it's true, in this the upheaval of this award season where everything is so unsure and every major contender has these glaring holes that's starting to be more solidified now that the Critics' Choice are in the rearview, but it's been nice to know that we have this one category where nothing has gone wrong and Shallow has won and continued to win the major precursors and will win the Oscar.
It gives you a feeling of safety. It gives you a feeling of assurance.
In Inception, when Leo had the trinket to let him know if he was in the dream world or not,
uh-huh.
That's what Shallow is, to let us know we're all okay.
I see. So it means a lot to you that basically the Academy or whoever's voting for these things, they're all not crazy.
Right. We're seeing the same movies at some point.
We have some of the same taste. Yes. Sensors. Yes. Whatever you want to call that. Aesthetics. Best action movie, Mike, another affirmation for you and I, is Mission Impossible Fallout. We thought it was a great action flick.
Why not nominate it for Best Picture then? Look, I understand, again, the stigma, the Academy, the critics, blah, 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 but it was an overall really good movie. I would say not only was it the best, it had the best action of the year, I think it also had the best story of any action movie of the year. You can argue about the performances being what they were, but they were decent enough. I don't understand. One of my hopes for 2019 is that the action pieces, the action movies, the genre pictures definitely get more accepted in the wide world of awards, which is not easy to say.
I think an action movie really will have to transcend kind of the genre, not just do the genre the best it's ever been done or as good as it's ever been done. Like Mission Impossible Fallout is as good of an action movie. Like they take the genre and they do it a great job with it.
Sure.
Get Out had to transcend horror last year, transcend the genre.
But doesn't
this movie's not transcending the genre.
Doesn't saying something transcends the genre just mean that the genre is never going to be worthy?
In a way, yes. Because, I mean, look, think about the genre of an action movie. It basically has to boil down to a fist fight between the good guy and the bad guy.
Sure.
I mean, it's a simpler way of telling a story, where you personify the antagonism in the form of a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's got to fight the personification of the protagonism in the form of a good guy. So, I mean, it's a way to tell a story, and it's a simpler way to do it. It's hard to make these feel realistic. And Mission Impossible had us on the edge of our seats. They did a phenomenal job. So, yes, I do think an action movie will have to transcend the genre down the line to really get into this category again for Best Picture.
Need that action movie that to be accepted by the Academy. It's got to be like an action movie that ends in a chess match between the two, as opposed to a
metaphorical chess match. Yes.
No, I mean a literal.
But in fisticuffs. Or a chess match that turns into a fist fight.
Like you swing a punch and then you move a rook.
That's also satire on modern politics and campaign finance reform. Michael, I think...
I've gone cross-eyed.
I think Mission Impossible Fallout, having just rewatched it. I mean, some of the action movie tropes are just preposterous at the end of that movie. Like the fact that everything's got to come down to the second and they're hanging by a finger and
That's why it's impossible, Mike!
I know it's impossible, but it's kind of silly.
Yes, it is.
And I will never see that in a Best Picture category.
Yeah, I don't think if it didn't happen with Mission Impossible Fallout, which again, I mean, it wasn't close to happening. I just don't think it's going to happen for that series anyway. So let's move on here then. Mike, the best young actor, actress, performer went to Elsie Fisher from 8th Grade. Do you care?
I do care. I think this movie needs to get more love, and I'm really excited that she won this category. I wonder if the Academy is going to like this movie more than we think. I think we stressed it back in our OSP, undeniably well-made movie. It's awkward as shit. We all know that. It's an awkward watch.
Which is the point of it.
The point of it.
Yeah.
But there are some like next level things he's accomplishing with that screenplay, with the direction, with the cinematography. It's wild some of the tricks he's pulling, Bo Burnham. I also think he's got a novelty to him. Like everybody in Hollywood, they know he's innovated stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
He's 6'5", so he has an ambiance. He has...
Plays for the Lakers in his off days, yeah.
He's like the super theater kid.
Absolutely.
If there was a theater kid that became a superhero, standing tall above the rest, it is Bo Burnham, right?
Wearing the suit of the night, too, I think, with the half-black, half-white jacket that he had going on.
And he has Elsie Fisher here, who is like a kid mature beyond her years, fights off trolls last week. She's like the heroine of a fantasy novel that I read every other week. And fighting off trolls and coming back here in an awesome suit of her own and delivering this kind of, you know, oh shucks speech and then like driving it home and being cute again.
Peace and love all. Yeah, it was a great job. And we are quite smitten with Elsie Fisher. I do think you say everything you can about Bo Burnham. I agree with you 100%. I've been on him for a while. I totally agree. I've never seen him as a filmmaker, this being his debut, obviously. But my Lord, does he have chops as a director. But Elsie Fisher, I would say, is right there. I think she's got a bright career ahead of her. Quite a very worthy win here, too, as well.
Last year, we were saying Phantom Thread should be nominated for everything, mm-hmm. right? And we're going through the process. We're saying this looks and feels like an Oscar movie in every which way. It's one of the best movies of the year in every which way. Everybody seems to be saying that about Eighth Grade that we talk to or whatever. And I wonder if at the end of the day, the Academy is just going to be like, this is undeniably an excellent movie, and we got to nominate a bunch of things for
him. I would love to see him get a nomination in either screenplay or director. Didn't get a nom for director here. Makes me think he won at the Academy. He did end up getting one for screenplay here, but there's always a chance, and you're right. There's precedent to suggest that the Academy is going to pick up the slack where the other precursors didn't. I think this is a very Academy-type movie. I would agree with you with your statement there. I think there's enough here to enjoy, and there's certainly enough intricacies to show off and be surprised with a nomination. I just wonder if there's going to be enough, you know, this is only his first time. There'll be other times.
He's winning all the best first feature stuff out there, just about. You're right. He's probably not going to get a director nod. Greenplay has got a shot, though. Mike, next category.
Yeah, Mahershala Ali in one of the supporting categories here, supporting actor. He's been sweeping up the precursors. I think that might be dead as well, but he did win as well tonight. Critics' Choice, Best Supporting Actor. He wins it. Mahershala Ali, do you care, Mike?
His piano player from the movie is up there doing the piano work tonight for the Critics' Choice Awards, the playoff music.
Yeah, what do we call that? Forecasting.
And he, you know, puts his arm around him and dedicates the award to him because they're friends, they're co-workers. I thought that was a nice moment.
Basically taught Mahershala how to play piano, he said, for Green Book. That was kind of cool.
It was a real classy moment. And the only thing, the problem I have with Mahershala is that they didn't launder his suit correctly. I mean, that is...
You were on that, yeah. You said it wasn't fitting him well.
No, the pink splotches all over the blue suit, like that is an error. That is a mistake at the laundry laundry process.
I'm gonna say I doubt it, but who knows?
Style.
Maybe.
I mean, it became a stylish thing. I mean, he makes it work, but I've done that to clothes of mine, and I've worn them in public.
Spilled a little bleach with the colors. Yeah, I think we've all been there.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
The more I watch these precursors, the more I'm convinced that. And again, this could be all blown to hell by the time the Oscars get here, but I'm convinced that the critics, the Academy, what you will, want to reward Green Book, but they also don't want to embrace the movie as a whole. And I think that's only going to strengthen Mahershala's chances come Oscars time. In the history of the Critics' Choice Awards with this award to supporting actors since 1995, there have only been 5 times a supporting actor had won the category in at least 2 of the 4 major precursor awards, Critics' Choice, Golden Globes, BAFTA, SAG Award.
Right.
Only 5 times has someone won 2 of those and not gone on to win the Oscar. So, and it has happened a bunch of times where somebody's won, you know, again, we talk about how the supporting ones are pretty basically sweeps. If you win one, you end up winning them all. So numbers are certainly on his side. The numbers this year are certainly on his side. History is on his side. I just think that feeling rings true, how Mahershala Ali has the performance. And I think he's going to end up with his second supporting actor nomination and win, quite frankly, at the Oscars.
60% of the time, it works every time.
That's not the number I gave, but all right.
I didn't understand a word you said, but I like what you said at the end of it. Anyway, we have Best Sci-Fi or Horror Movie, Michael, A Quiet Place, one over Hereditary.
No, I don't care.
You don't care.
Bitter. Halloween and Hereditary didn't win. No, it was nice to see John Krasinski. He seemed very... Everybody loves him. Of course everybody loves him. He's such a personable guy. He seemed very gracious and humble in his victory speech. It's nice to see A Quiet Place get its day in the moment. It's nice to see horror movies, even though it is a horror category, be accepted at these precursor award shows whenever they do happen. So I liked it.
It's a strong movie. We did the OSP way back. You got to scroll like 100 episodes ago or go into our playlist for the Oscar Sprint Profiles to find it. 2018-19 playlist.
That's Mike's way of saying he doesn't want to record as much.
But it's my way of saying I really don't want to poop on it right now and just say, go back to it. We didn't love it, and I really didn't like it that much. I tried to rewatch it. And
got respectable grades from us, nonetheless, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's fine. It's all right. Some people love it. I don't get that. Anyway, Mike, the See Her Award went to Claire Foy this year.
She's been busy.
Yes.
Unsane, The Crown, obviously First Man, which she was nominated for tonight for Supporting Actress. I didn't know she was as big of an advocate for gender equality and women's rights as she kind of talked about tonight. So that was nice to learn about her. I'm a fan of Claire Foy. We both have said multiple times how we think she and Sterling K. Yeah. Brown are kind of the two on the cusp of superstardom in the movie world.
We wanted her to have that breakout year, yeah. Correct? And I'm glad she's nominated for most things in terms of the Best Supporting Actress category for First Man. We thought she was awesome in that. I'm upset that the Dragon Tattoo sequel
didn't even mention that. Yeah, Dragon Tattoo as well.
It did not work out for her in terms of box office. It definitely bombed. We loved Unsane. So that may show up in the Mike Montgomery.
I was just going to say that. That may pop up in the MMOs for us the day before the week of the Oscars Academy Awards here.
So we care about Claire Foy. She gave a weird speech. Like, it was up and down. Like, she was trying to be self-effacing for a while. Actors aren't the best at being self-effacing.
There's all kinds of subtext in that line, huh? Yeah, it is. It is tough, I would say, for some of them. But, you know, it's just not for some people. It is for others. I am glad to see her get some kind of praise this year, though. I think it's well-deserved, and she certainly has worked hard enough for it.
Christian Bale said later in the night, I mean, acting is just humiliating yourself, so we're all a bunch of assholes, apparently. I thanked Satan last week, and this week I'm just going to call all acting ridiculous.
I also liked how he thanked the HFPA tonight, because he forgot to last week.
We're a new movie podcast, award show podcast. We say the darndest things. We're like kids. I don't give a fuck. I'll just say what I need to say. It's late at night. All right. I mean, the backhanded compliments and the stuff out of the sides of their mouths tonight. Claire Foy early, Christian Bale later, Chuck Lorre in the middle. There's some WTF moments throughout this award show, Michael. And I wonder if those were necessary or we could see the Spider-Verse people walk up there because, Michael, best animated feature was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I'm going to be the only person in all of the movie critical world that's going to predict Incredibles 2 to win the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be right, and I'm going to laugh in everybody's face.
Right, what odds will it take to shake you from this core belief?
I would still take the... Well, I mean, any so odds right now,
like
I'll take it.
If it's like 15-1,
I'm taking it. Give me those odds, baby. I'll take it.
You're not going to just shy away from that.
This is happening. And I could be, I'll be a fool. It's fine. Spider-Verse can go ahead, win everything like it has been. It'll win the Academy Award, and I'll be the dummy. But I'm smelling a conspiracy here. I'm smelling it.
What does it smell like? It
smells like Robert Iger's directives. It smells like Robert Iger's dressing room right now. That's what it smells like, all right? I'm on to this. You're going to find me dead in a ditch next week with mouse ears over my head, but like I'm the first one that has this dead to rights.
Again, we speak truth to power. We say the darndest things. We're new.
If I turn up missing, just know the mouse did it, all right?
Michael, the next portion of the undercard.
Yeah, let's talk about Black Panther. It did win production design, visual effects, and costume design. Did 3 undercard awards. Impressive.
I care about this, Mike, because it got blanked last week with the BAFTA nomination, sir. And the Golden Globes weren't too kind to it. I think this is a big deal. Production design makes sense. Visual effects over Avengers Infinity War is like a nerd rage thing for me.
Me too. Like, if you're going to give it to a Marvel film, yeah.
The mall looked too good, and the waterfall did not. Sorry. Casino. I have a problem with that.
Casino Fight looked awesome
Casino
in Black
Casino Fight
though,
looked
so,
awesome. Yeah. So the highs of Black Panther were awesome. And costume design, we were yelling about this a while back.
Why wouldn't this get credit? Absolutely.
Why wouldn't this win most costume design awards?
And we were both wrong. We both said the favorite because of the history of the costume design award going to the period piece, but I love this. Costume design all day. Give it to Black Panther. I love it. The history of African tribes that was worked into these costumes for the costume design and the production design of the movie in general, I thought absolutely worthy of award. So you could say, yeah, it got beat up in terms of it's probably not a major contender for any of the big 5, big 6 awards. That's fine. I think it's going to win some that it's very worthy of winning and should feel very proud. Yeah, and by the way, it's still the third or fourth highest grossing film of all time. Don't cry for them.
Yeah, the favorite just went to like a Downton Abbey place. They went to Upton Abbey and they shot it there. Like, yeah. Why does that win production design?
No, I'm with you. Absolutely.
All those paintings were not placed there by the crew. There's no effing way. They were there already. And costume design, yes, the stitching of those dresses, I'm not going to lie, really well done.
Yeah.
But no, these are made from whole cloth. These are originated and innovated. And I was floored throughout watching that movie for the first few times, rewatching it on Netflix, go all the way back, even before A Quiet Place.
Before last year's Oscars. Yeah.
Before last year's Oscars. Black Panther, two-part OSP. We really went down a rabbit hole in describing all those influences on this production.
Yeah, and do yourself a favor. Listen to us for the info we gathered, and go out of your way to try and find information about what went into those costumes and the whole setting of Black Panther and how much of the culture and history of African tribes they put into that movie. It is mind-blowing.
I haven't bought a DVD in a long time or a movie or a Blu-ray in a long time.
Sure, that's what they're called.
4K or whatever. I'm a VOD guy now. I'm basically streaming.
That's better than being a VHS guy, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And I would be curious to buy this one because I would want to watch that like 90-minute long
Making
of documentary.
Yeah, definitely go seek this out for yourself. And I think once you do, you will have an even greater appreciation, root even harder for Black Panther in these awards come Oscar times as well.
Speaking of Mike favorites, to finish up here, and do you care? First Man won editing and original score. We love that movie. We raved about it, and now it's taking home some more awards.
What is... Okay, great, but if it wins editing at the Oscars, why isn't it being taken more seriously as a Best Picture candidate?
Editing feels like a composition award, right? We're giving credit, in a way, to overall composition, even though we're giving credit to the flow, essentially, of a movie.
And essentially, the entire cinematic experience.
Right.
Right?
To me, it's like an award that does touch on the overall. I'm trying to explain this correctly. I agree.
I think I'm following what you're saying, and I agree.
And if it's getting editing and it's winning editings, it should be up for Best Picture.
Yeah, so we're saying the same thing. I absolutely concur. The Justin Hurwitz score has won a bunch of precursors. It won the Golden Globe. It now won the Critics' Choice. It seems like, if nothing else, this is going to walk away from the Oscars with at least one award to its name. We both feel it deserves more, but at least it's going to be on record as an Oscars winner when Best Score comes and goes. So I'm grateful for that.
Justin Hurwitz, man.
I think this movie is worthy of a second look by everyone. Yes. I don't think a lot of people either sat through it or got what they expected. Maybe their expectations played with them, but go into this with a clear and just try it again. There is so much good in this movie.
I'm reading the book right now. Yeah. I'm loving it.
Good. I'm glad to hear
that. I'm going to save my rewatch for when I finish the book on Audible.
Oh, that's smart.
And then I'm going to rewatch it with new eyes, fresh eyes.
Final one here, hair and makeup, as we predicted and as everyone predicted, went to Vice.
Can this be like one of the only awards for Vice? I'm just over that movie.
Oh, man.
I really did not enjoy my rewatch of this movie. I really did not. I remember saying things in the first part of our OSP, like, I think this is an undeniably good movie. I don't know if I think that anymore. I listened to some of our friends' podcasts, and they soured me on it even more so. And I was, like, thinking a lot of things that they were saying, which is awesome, and they really get us.
Makes you feel smart.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking a lot of things they were saying, which was great. We reviewed that right on the heels of watching it. We didn't sit with it that long.
No, I don't disagree. Again, it's a very polarizing movie. Argue about whether it's right or wrong. We did all that in our OSP, the Oscar Sprint Profile, for it. I will say this, though. All of that, even taken into consideration, I still think this is worthy of hair and makeup win.
Hair and makeup makes sense. The movie, I'm souring on the movie. I'm down on the movie. Stock down on the movie.
Fair enough.
It might not get what we all think it's going
to
get.
Christian Bale may have been our vice president from 2000 to 2008. Yeah,
he may have actually been him.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on here. Let's wrap it up with the Oscar race update, as we always do.
The Oscar goes to...
And the winner is...
MMOW's Oscar Race Update.
So the Oscar Race Update portion of Mike, and Oscar Weekly. This is where we take the news stories of the week that most affect the Oscar race and put a microscope on them and tell you about them and what we think. And once again, it's the Critics' Choice Rewind for us. So we're going to start here with Best Supporting Actress tonight. It went to Regina King once again, Michael.
We keep drawing attention to the SAG snub, the BAFTA snub, because it's such a weird situation for us now. This winner of multiple major precursor awards, Golden Globe, and Critics' Choice not getting nominated at the other shows, Michael? What the hell is going on with this category?
I don't know. I don't understand. I've never seen anything like this where you made the comment last week during our Golden Globes recap.
That they're not seeing it.
Well, one, that they may not be seeing it.
You keep quoting me again?
Well, two, the point I was going to make that you did say, to quote you again, yeah, she may not always make it, but when she does, she wins. She takes home these prizes, and that was just seen again tonight. So
bizarre.
It is really, really odd to see her not only not win two of the four precursors, but not be included at all. And it brings up questions. Is she going to make the Oscars field? Has there ever been a woman that's won two of the four major precursors and missed the Oscars altogether? The answer is no. Only twice in the history of the Critics' Choice has a woman who has won any of the four major precursors, so let alone two. We're talking any one of the Globes, Critics' Choice, BAFTA, or SAG for Best Supporting Actress not made it to nominations at the Oscars. One was Thandie Newton, 2005-2006. She won the BAFTA for Crash, didn't make the Oscars field. Sigourney Weaver was the other one in 97-98, won the BAFTA for The Ice Storm, but the BAFTAs actually took place after the Oscars until 2001, so you can't even really count that one. So really, sure, we're talking one time in history that somebody has won one precursor for Best Supporting Actress and not made the Oscars race, never mind two.
That's insane. So she's going to be nominated for an Oscar.
You would think so. And once again, if she's nominated, she's the favorite, isn't she?
Now that she's won, now it kind of puts her over the hump, basically, is what we're saying. So that all of the stuff about BAFTA, all the stuff about SAG, where she got snubbed, now we're thinking it's just them not seeing the movie.
I mean, who's the favorite if she doesn't make the field? Or who's even second place right now to her? It's just wild. It is wild to see what is going on with this category.
Bizarre.
We'll move on to Best Ensemble. That went to the favorite, Mike.
Thought it was going to go to Crazy Rich Asians. Crazy Rich Asians has been winning Best Ensemble categories. The favorite takes it here. This makes sense because it has a lot of nominations for actors and actresses.
Sure.
Elsewhere.
Three great performances.
And and contenders elsewhere, like Nicholas Hoult.
Two borderline performances, sure, like Nicholas Hoult as well. Yeah, this is good and bad news. History is kind of on the side for the favorite. We all figured it's going to make the field for Best Picture, the nomination field of the Oscars. I think that's in stone now. Only once since 2001, which was the first year the Best Ensemble Prize was given out of the Critics' Choice Awards, has the winner of this award not gone on to make the Oscars field for Best Picture. That was Hairspray in 2007. However, of the 17 times this award's been given out for Best Ensemble, only six of the winners prior to tonight have gone on to actually win the Best Picture award.
Strange.
So, very odd. So, you're saying it's the best cast, but not the best movie. It's only called the best movie 33% of the time.
And yet, it's not even nominated at SAG for Best Ensemble. Bohemian Rhapsody is.
This is the crazy, crazy year.
This is the weirdest year. It's talk about weird years, Michael. First Reformed, not nominated in most other places, in most of the other major precursors. Nominated here for original screenplay. Wins here for original screenplay. Michael, the last 10 winners of this category won the Oscar.
It's a big number. That's a big number.
10 straight. They're 10 for 10. Obviously, some of those 10, there was not an adapted and original, I think. Or no, maybe all of those 10... One. Original screenplay, one. And then every single winner for Best Screenplay at the Critics' Choice Awards. In the history of Critics' Choice Awards, was nominated for an Oscar. So a lot of people have been worrying about Paul Schrader and First Reformed getting a nod. This seems to cinch it, no?
I now feel much more confident in Paul Schrader making the Oscars than I do Ethan Hawke. Because Ethan Hawke didn't make the cut here tonight.
He wasn't there tonight.
He wasn't there. He lost out to Christian Bale. Christian Bale makes history with his two wins. So I think that is kind of being written. Ethan Hawke, who was the heavy leader with all the critic circles precursors, ends up not making it here, not making the finish line. And now you have this huge stat that you just referenced that says Paul Schrader is not only going to be nominated, but should be considered the heavy favorite in the category for original screenplay. Add to that the fact that he seems to be well-liked by the Academy, by a lot of people in Hollywood. A lot of people talk glowingly about him, and there's this definite push sometimes once a year for someone to get their Lifetime Achievement Oscar that they're overdue for.
Right.
I thought this might be Spike Lee's year. It seems definitely like now it's Paul Schrader's narrative.
I'm surprised this came back up. And the crit, well, the critics have been championing this movie forever. Like, not a lot of people have seen this movie. It's on Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. if you want to see it. We did do an OSP a while back, and the momentum has been building in one spot. It's been building with the critics. So we should not have been as surprised.
No.
And we probably, you know, made a stupid pick there with The Favorite, right? We both picked The Favorite.
Both picked The Favorite. We're wrong.
So, I mean, The Favorite to us felt like a winner, but and it still could be a winner at the Academy stage.
We'd have
I
to
wonder,
just break a streak is all of 10 yeah. years in a row.
But it has or 10 to break times a in a row. 10 out of 10. Michael, best adapted screenplay, If Beale Street Could Talk. Is that The Favorite now?
It's been The Favorite, at least according to Gold Derby. The experts on there, it was kind of fighting neck and neck for a while with BlacKkKlansman. It's pulled since pulled away. I actually thought BlacKkKlansman would pull the upset again, going with the let's get Spike Lee and Oscar narrative here. Not the case. Barry Jenkins, If Beale Street Could Talk, takes home the Critics' Choice Award. I do think, absolutely, it's probably the prohibitive favorite in this category, so this as it has been for yeah. months.
So this is the time of the year we're all like, narrative, narrative, narrative. Right. Give us the Oscar narrative. Where is that narrative? Oh my God, we have to have this person win. To me, I just rewatched BlacKkKlansman. To me, it's like Spike's 10th best film. I'm not surprised. We're going to do an OSP on If Beale Street Could Talk this week.
Sure.
You're going to hear what I think about that, and I think it's phenomenal. So this makes sense, and it makes sense that the critics recognize it at the show.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, you're dealing with a guy that's very heavily liked by a lot of people, that a lot of critics. The critics make up a lot of the Academy as well. Sure, this all makes sense and it's all wrapping up. We're just basically repeating the Oscars from 2 years ago. Barry Jenkins is there. Mahershala Ali is there.
Damien Chazelle.
Yeah, we're on repeat every other year now. Good. And good for Barry Jenkins as well. I'd like to see him become take home that Oscar for adapted screenplay. But let's talk about the big one here, though. The big ones. Roma. We let off the show with it.
Yep.
It not only won Best Picture, which is what we let off the show with, but it also won Best Director. Alfonso Cuarón took it home.
Alfonso Cuarón dominating the Critics Association. So this is not a huge surprise, but it kind of definitely affirms what we all thought was going to happen. And let's be honest, Ethan Hawke is dominating Best Actor Critics Associations in a similar way, not to the height of the numbers, like 20 versus 30,
mm-hmm.
but they're both dominating, and yet this one is the one that basically says, all right, he's the front runner.
What's amazing, though, this is kind of a weird stat, and you could say it's cherry picking, but it's just what the trend has been in Best Director. So the last 2 years, a director has won the award at both the Gold Globes and the Critics' Choice. Del Toro, Damien Chazelle before him,
yep.
the last 2 years. They've gone on to win the Oscar.
Okay.
And six times in the past 8 years, since film year 2010, the Critics' Choice Best Director winner has swept the three main precursors, Globes, Critics' Choice, and BAFTAs. However, of those six times, so usually you go on to sweep them, you think you're going to win the Oscar.
Right.
But of the last six directors who have swept the precursors, only three have won the Oscar.
Weird.
Very weird, right?
Very
so
weird.
Where there's three times where a director hasn't won a single major precursor and won only at the Academy Awards. Two of those times, David Fincher for The Social Network in 2010, 2011, he lost the Academy Award to Tom Hooper for The King's Speech.
Makes you
angry. Richard Linklater in 2014-15 for Boyhood lost it to Iñárritu for Birdman.
Oh, I'm so happy about that.
And then there was the one time that the guy that swept all the three major precursors, because again, I'm sorry, the SAG doesn't give out the best director precursor,
right.
Ben Affleck in 2012-13 didn't even get nominated at the Oscars for Best Director. So there's this weird current of things happening in Best Director. You just touched on Cuarón's been the favorite, should be seen as the favorite, maybe is considered a lock after tonight. There's just this weird undercurrent of he could be very, very surprised come Oscar Sunday, and there's no way of preparing for it outside of picking the second place guy.
Something we've yet to research, Michael, the DGA stats. I would wonder.
Sure. Good point.
I would wonder if the DGA stats will carry over more closely to the Oscars rather than these award show stats, because the Directors Guild, at least in the last few years, they've been pretty telling about who they've picked is going on to win. I wonder if it's that late momentum for this category. If there's been a lot of close races, perhaps, and you know everybody else is just like going to defer to the directors or all the other directors in the Academy typically vote their winner in. I don't know.
Man, gun to my head tonight, it would be shocking if Cuarón doesn't win the director Shocking. At the Oscars, right?
That's his category, right? Cinematography. However, maybe he's going to win cinematography. Everybody thinks so there.
Spread the love type thing.
Spread the love. I just don't know if there's another clear winner, like a clear favorite. Like, we haven't seen that narrative develop throughout award season. Like, Peter Farrelly, no, right? The critics don't love that movie. The Metascore is down. His speech last week was a downer, and people gave him crap for that. But it's also probably going to win foreign film, too. Like, so will the Academy think foreign film win? He's a producer. He's winning an Oscar for it. Cinematography win. He's the DP. Oscar. If he's going to come away with two guaranteed Oscars, maybe there's a long shot where he...
And maybe Best Picture. And is he going to be the sweeper? Is it considered one of the all-time greatest films? Do we want to spread the love? I think that's a great narrative. Again, there's that word that's going to be part of this Oscars puzzle. And on that note, let's talk about the Oscars puzzle for Best Picture now, kind of where we stand in the hierarchy of things after this Roma win tonight for Best Picture.
Yeah, Ann Thompson just mentioned on the IndieWire podcast that I really like that Roma may get some blowback coming up about Netflix being something that not all of Hollywood is thrilled about. I mean, Netflix
Makes
is
sense.
Throwing around big money.
Yeah.
So maybe it has a reverse effect. If they're throwing around big money, maybe everybody's like, all right, we're accepting you now, Netflix. I will sign on the dotted line if you pay me that money. I don't know. Yeah. That's a very human reaction. However, they tend to kind of leap over a lot of the BS that Hollywood personnel just have to deal with. Like, they don't have to live and die with box office. They just don't.
Sure.
And that's they don't have to deal with that affirmation process.
No.
So they can basically say, we're going to put this out to the world. It can become a hit on its own timeline. Sometimes it happens like Bird Box in the first week.
They're immune to critic ratings. They're immune to box office. Like you said, there's a lot of immunity built into Netflix. And a lot of that is due to them not releasing numbers.
Yeah,
they can do what they want with their own numbers.
And when it's down, it's like they protect their own brand. They protect their own original stories. And they only announce it when it's a smash hit. That makes a lot of sense for...
Now, is that going to be... First of all, is that pervasive enough in the Academy... Or does the Academy, for the most part, by and large, want to make nice with Netflix and
That's
kind
the
of
question.
Reward? Yeah.
Is this the year to make nice with Netflix? Or is this a year, if like Roma loses at this point, we think it's a major contender. If it loses, did Netflix hold it back?
Well, not only major contender, but I right now, I don't know, want to speak for you. You can comment on this. I see Roma as the favorite, but I don't see there's a head and shoulders definite Best Picture winner right now. I see Roma leading the pack.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely enough wiggle room for, I don't know if you want to call it a compromise candidate or if you don't want to call it a compromise candidate in this year because there's no definitive leader or head and shoulders above the rest of the pack. I think there's enough wiggle room there for that type of blowback to affect it and everyone to have that second and third voting and priority balloting take something to a Best Picture win.
I tend to think for Best Picture, preferential balloting is going to put Roma in the driver's seat because everybody is going to have Roma in their top five. Everybody.
More than A Star Is Born?
Yeah.
More
I think
than
a lot of people have some hate for A Star Is Born.
More than The Favorite?
Yes.
More
I think
than
a lot. I think The Favorite's a tough watch at times. You just talk about the arcs of the stories. You know, Roma is vegetables for much of the movie. But there's an emotional core that's just released at the end of it. I'm not going to say if it's positive or negative, tragedy or not. But that movie is satisfying at the end, I would say.
So how many movies right now do you think legitimately, realistically have a chance at winning Best Picture?
So we talked about this before the show, where we talked about compromise candidates. And we kind of identified two. In Green Book and A Star Is Born, we still think Green Book has a shot, even though we're waiting for the backlash. We've been waiting
It'd be
for
nice
it forever.
If it came.
I do think A Star Is Born being the most of the year favorite.
See, A Star Is Born worries me with the storyline you just pitched because there's not a lot of people that talk bad about it, especially not like we do, at least not in the tones we do. And so that makes me think it's going to be third place on a lot of ballots. You know, maybe somebody likes The Favorite, really likes The Favorite, really likes Roma, and maybe Star Is Born is the de facto number three. And it's not only the de facto number three, but it's the someone that's going chalk. You know,
Sean Fennessy just mentioned this on the Big Picture podcast, and I thought he's dead on. And we've talked about it in the past, too. Essentially, that compromise candidate, if you get 20 threes and fours
right,
versus 10 ones, sometimes the 20 threes and fours
is enough.
It's almost equal to the right. 10 ones.
And that's kind of my point. It's the least offensive, it's the least polarizing movie in that everyone was like, oh, I kind of like this Star is Born.
Right.
I feel like of the options, that's the one with the least amount of potential blowback or backlash.
Least amount. I think I go the other way, and I think it potentially could get a lot of blowback, and it has received it silently already based on that storyline. In a similar way that you kind of were saying after we reviewed it, like, there's no way this is going to sweep everything.
Because there's people's no expectations were that it was going to be so great.
Expectations for a...
It's a fair argument.
An anthem of a movie that it's not that.
No.
I like the fact that it's not that, and I rate it very high. Look, there's a lot to play out yet for Best Picture, I would say. I know that momentum is going to shift after this window, this nomination voting window happens, and then the actual winner voting happens. Because we have BAFTAs, we have all the guilds still to weigh in. Roma kind of takes a lead tonight, but I don't think it's a shoo-in like you said earlier. I think we're going to have other candidates
come up. This is like if Mario Kart, this is the second of four laps completed. We got two to go still.
But that being said, Bohemian Rhapsody, we're going to do an Oscar nominations preview. My thesis statement, I'm telling you right now, Academy, do not nominate Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, I got bad
news. Nominate Rami Malek.
Bad news for you, Mike.
Do not even nominate it. And let's all show, just like the critics did tonight, let's all show that that was a silly thing that happened. And it was done by 99 people at the Hollywood Foreign Press.
And if I may, in its stead, nominate Hereditary.
They won't do it. They might not. We have to push for a better Mike and Oscar favorite. Let's say eighth grade.
I would love eighth grade. Well, First Man, I think, is going to make the field. I really do.
I do, too.
I don't think it has a shot at winning,
let's
though.
Say this year's also Mike Phantom Thread is kind of like a throwback to what we did months ago. It's eighth grade this year.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. I would flip out with joy. Gun to your head, Mike, just so we have it on record. You had to pick the Academy of One. You're picking the best picture right now for the Oscars. Who's winning?
Roma's winning. And A Star is Born is second. I do think it comes down between Roma and A Star is Born. I think Green Book gets some backlash at the end of the day.
That's probably where I land. Probably, I could see the favorite making noise, too, because critics did love it a lot. But I probably agree with that.
I love the favorite. I think it can get wins elsewhere that could kind of give it its credit that it's due.
There's the puzzle piece coming into play, too. Let's not reward it for Best Picture. Sure, we want to know what you guys think, absolutely, not only about what the Best Picture category will do at large, but we want to know what you thought about the Critics' Choice. Both the awards given out and the program itself, are we way off base? Was it more exciting than we gave it credit for? What did you think about Taye Diggs in general? Let us know. Do you want to work for Chuck Lorre? Let us know that, too.
I do,
because that man just makes stars.
Did we eat too many potato chips and just get like half depressed and cynical while we watched the show tonight? Was I just... dying to watch the Game of Thrones preview and the True Detective
which you did.
First episode. And I had so much anxiety about that I kind of just phoned in my focus for watching the Critics' Choice Awards show. Do you think it was much better than we said?
Let us know your thoughts on those things and more. You can reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com.com, and on Reddit. We're available everywhere you hear podcasts. Tune in, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, etc., etc. Michael, Critics' Choice Awards in the rear view, Golden Globes in the rear view. We're looking forward now to the BAFTAs, I think, are the next major one, which is 2 weeks prior to the Academy Awards. Waiting for Academy voting, which will be ending soon, at least for the nominations portion. Give us some words of wisdom to start our week with here on Monday.
Where a Toni Collette falls, a Bo Burnham may rise.
Oboe.
You fed me that line. I'm not even going to pretend to take credit for it, but it's wisdom. I agree with it.
Yes.
Great job.
Yes. Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies with us. Let's go, Bo. You're our hopes and dreams now. We'll check you guys out next week. Have a good Monday.
See ya.